This is Dr. Michael Bricky with Ageless Lifestyles Radio, cutting-edge thinking for being youthful at every age. On each program, I interview experts on what it takes to live longer, healthier, and happier. Our program takes a holistic approach in addressing anti-aging psychology, that's my baby, medicine, alternative medicine, fitness, nutrition, and wellness. Our emphasis is on innovative thinking and practices that have solid data and results. The movie Carrie begins with Carrie in the girls' locker room. Clueless about what's happening to her, she has her first period. And instead of being helpful, her classmates tease her mercilessly. Does aging sometimes seem like that to you? Do you find you sneeze and wet your pants, or you try to pee and you can't, or none of the shoes in your closet fit, and when you go to a shoe store, they don't fit either? Or perhaps you have things that you've always wondered about, like why so many older women wear too much perfume, or how much sex are people having, or how do you ask your fiancé for a prenup? There are lots of textbooks and manuals on aging, and they're usually boring and rarely discuss the nitty-gritty questions about aging. Like Carrie, we need someone to tell us about the facts of life, about aging. Back in 1971, David Rubin wrote a runaway bestseller, Everything You Always Wanted to Know About Sex But Were Afraid to Ask. 36 years later, Lynette Padwell wrote the equivalent for aging titled, Quick, Answer Me Before I Forget the Question. She researched and gives practical advice and does it with a great sense of humor. Today we're going to have some fun looking at the facts of life about aging, and we're going to get some answers to some questions that you didn't even know to ask. Lynette, welcome.
Hello, thanks for having me.
You went to the Hair Club for Men and you got kicked out? How did that happen?
The question that really kicked off this book was, what really happens at the Hair Club for Men? I had seen those ads forever and I got curious about it, and among the things that people get more anxious about as they get older is losing hair. So I thought, what the heck really happens over there? And I went to their Los Angeles headquarters to interview people and find out, and I claimed to be looking on behalf of my boyfriend, and they didn't really like that idea. They keep their methods secret, and they also disapproved that I might think he had a receding hairline and that that wasn't okay. So ultimately, they told me a little bit about what I wanted to know, but they did kick me out. It was like, get serious about joining or leave now. So I had to leave.
Were they not buying the bit about your boyfriend and thought you were a reporter, or they just didn't like the boyfriend bit?
It was sort of interesting because I think their attitude was, what's so bad about a receding hairline, interestingly enough, as if he's okay with it, you should be okay with it, which I happen to agree with. So that's what they sort of disapproved about, and they also just did not want to let me see what really went on unless I was serious about joining.
I can't imagine them not wanting to sell their product.
The thing that I found out was now the Hair Club for Men and Women, and so many people really have problems with hair loss, emotional problems, and it's a sensitive issue. And the woman I was speaking to clearly was wearing a giant wig, and so it's very personal. And they disapproved of my kind of marching in there and I'll just enroll my boyfriend without telling him because I don't like his hairline. So that's what their problem was with me, and I kind of respect them for that.
So some of their ambivalence might have come from they were clients themselves and had mixed feelings about it.
It looked to me like everyone who worked there was indeed a client. And since I was able to tell so easily, I don't know what that says about the product, but some of the hair looked pretty good. Would definitely be a solution for people who are really concerned about it. A lot of guys look fine, shaved heads, receding hairlines. Some people don't look as good and they aren't as comfortable. And of course, as you get older, usually well past 50, women can lose a lot of hair too, and they do need something to be able to do about it. And the Hair Club and a lot of other places offer some good solutions. So I kind of hate to pick on them, but the name is really funny.
Oh, yes, you know. And particularly since you call it a club. It's not the kind of club you'd
want
to belong to.
A club no one wants to really belong
membership
to,
has its privileges, though, I guess. Well, you know, it amazed me in your book. You said a lot of the hair pieces they were wearing were just so obvious. How can they be in business if they don't have convincing representatives?
Some people it looked good on. Part of it for me was as I walked down those halls, I was really looking at people's hair, maybe focusing on it more than you would out in the regular world. So then it just seemed kind of glaringly obvious. But some of them did look good.
So it's like a dentist seeing teeth everywhere.
Exactly, exactly. And I think it also has to do with the kind of hair you have. I sort of got the impression that straight hair actually looked better, depending on the cut, but it probably really varies according to individual. So one thing that I found while researching this book was most men want more hair because they want to appear more attractive to the opposite sex. But after the age of 50, it's just so rare to find any man who has all his hair that it sort of becomes a moot point. Women are out there thinking to themselves, I'm not dating any guy who hasn't had any hair loss. They're not going
to
be dating
any guy. It's hard enough to find a guy when your woman's over 40 or so.
Exactly. So one good thing about aging is, in a way, it becomes a nice equalizer. Mm-hmm. And some of these silly standards just drop away. And I think that's a positive aspect of aging.
So was the hair club really a club? Did you get a membership card or something? what goes on there?
So you walk in there and it's the atmosphere is like a spa combined with the dentist's office or a doctor's office. There's a little waiting room and then there's a book full of testimonials from people who went to places like Africa and no one in the tent even noticed that they had their hair club hairpiece on the whole time, and actually some of them are quite moving, these testimonials, and then they have little consultation rooms, and then separate styling rooms, because the situation with the hair club is it's a sophisticated hairpiece that molds into your scalp. The hair is human hair that's tied onto this very, very thin, almost as thin as a nylon stocking, molded to your head, so you have to, again, it's glued on with surgical glue. So you have to keep going back, depending on how fast your hair grows. You'll go back, say, every 6 weeks and have it taken off, re-glued, merged with your hair, styled, and all that. So that's why it's a club, because you have to keep going.
So for their premier product, it's pretty high maintenance.
Yeah, it is pretty high maintenance. It's just that it's a lot cheaper than hair transplants. Hair transplants are the way to go, if you can afford them. They're so sophisticated now. They range in price depending on how many you're going to do, but it's thousands of dollars, and it's just more than a lot of people can afford, and of course your insurance isn't going to cover it. So if you do have the money, hair transplants are great.
So the hair transplants are about $15,000, and the hair piece is about $2,000?
Right, but that's just the hair piece. You're going to keep paying, and I'm not sure what the monthly fees are.
Club membership.
Right, club membership. But it's ongoing. Mm. So on the other hand, you know, people get haircuts anyway, right? They're not cheap. So it's kind of like paying for a haircut. It's probably more than that.
Women spend that much at a beauty parlor.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I don't know how much men spend. But, you know, I wouldn't put down the hair club. It's worth checking out if you're so inclined. But in the book, I have some statistics and some research on what women find attractive in men, what men find attractive in women. And if guys would do well to just really think about how much it actually matters before they start spending money on things like hair club or hair transplant.
Well, what are the top three or four things that women find most attractive in men?
It does not change much from when they're young. The top one is sense of humor and personality, values, character, things like that. Looks are further down, way further down. And that's consistent with what it is when they're young as well. There is a significant difference in the things that are important to men as they get older. Midlife guys, one of the very top things they're concerned about is the woman kind? Kindness, very important.
So that comes with age.
Yeah, but wasn't pulled out by women, maybe because they always were more concerned about, is he funny, what's his personality like? Whereas young men, they do care about personality, but men are, old or young, more visual. They just are. So even in midlife, of course, they still want someone who's bothered to try to still look attractive and hasn't, quote-unquote, let herself go. But they are more focused than they used to be on how nice the person is. And we can pretty much guess why that reason is. Anyone who's dating is probably divorced.
On women's top 10 list, is hair even on there?
No. In fact, there's some other funny research in the book about bodybuilding and mm-hmm. muscles, which not only are unimportant to women, they are, when taken too far, really disgusting to women. So that is sort of the biggest gap, young or old, in what men and women deem attractive in a man. Men are really into muscles. Women are not so into muscles.
So the women find it disgusting because it seems narcissistic, or maybe they're even a little afraid of the power, or they associate it with sports obsession?
It is not that women find hard bodies unattractive. I think they just, as long as someone's not overweight, they just simply don't care that much. There's a huge divide in the media's presentation of hard bodies and washboard abs and six packs, and guys get really into that and feel like they must develop the six pack. And I have never met a woman or seen any evidence that they care at all. So guys care about their big guns and, you know, all that. And I think they like with lifting weights, which is great as you get older to stay in shape. I'm not knocking it, but it's just not anything to be concerned about in terms of feeling attractive. The bigger thing to be concerned about is just, are you fit? Are your love handles relatively small? Do you not have a giant beard mm-hmm. yet? Things like that.
I want to go back to what you said about hair transplants. I disagree with you a little bit. If somebody is just losing a little bit of hair, they can work marvelously well. But by the time a man loses a good portion of his hair, there's not enough hair in the back of your head to cover the top, and then you're stuck with the same problem.
You are totally correct. I think probably, I don't know any statistics on this, but the men who get those transplants are probably mostly in their 30s, so that they're getting hair loss kind of early. They still do have that hair on the back of their head. Of course, it depends on the pattern of male baldness that the individual has. Sort of a throw of the dice, I guess, as to how much hair they'll ultimately end up losing. Although very few men lose it all down at the back, which is where they usually take mm-hmm. it from. It's so individual. But yes, there's certainly a point of no return where it's not going to matter. You have to hope you have a shapely head.
And now we have the trend of shaving your head, which some men look just really macho and great in it, and some just don't have the right shape of head for it.
Exactly. That is a problem. Who even knows what shape their head is until you do that? Even when your hair is wet, you can't really tell. Mm-hmm. So I guess you just have to try it once. Of course, you've got a very short haircut. If you're losing your hair and you've been keeping it very short, shaving it looks cool. It does look good. It does look macho. So guys have been just keeping it really short anyway. Might want to give it a try.
Mm-hmm. This wasn't in your book, but on behalf of a lot of men, what's with the little old ladies in the nursing homes who go to the beauty shop every other week as faithfully as a nun going to church, and half the time I can't tell the difference?
No, I asked someone about that. I asked a hairstylist about that once. After a certain age, it is just very difficult to style your hair, number one. Difficult when you're young, but then you have more hair. The older you get and the thinner it gets, it's just so hard for them to do anything with it. So all that spraying and styling, they don't touch it. They will sleep with it like that until the next time they go back and get it washed. One of the reasons is women lose hair just like men do, but they lose it evenly all over their heads. So it's not that apparent even to the woman until at some point she goes to put her hair back in a ponytail and realizes it's really thin. And when you get to be elderly, just look bad. You look so bad with no hair on your head. So that's why they keep going. And they want to look good. It doesn't matter if they're 80, 90. They still want to look good.
Gee, if we can develop chia pets, why can't we develop a little something you rub on your hair?
Oh, I know. Wouldn't that person make a fortune? We would all love to have more hair. Well, look, you can use minoxidil. It works for many people if you get to yourself before you start losing a lot of hair. But some people are just not comfortable with the idea of putting something on their scalp for the rest of their life. But if you are comfortable with it, it will work. And it's relatively safe. There really aren't any bad side effects with it. I did research it. That's in the book. Some people get a little itching, but people have been using it for 20 years now. So you can pretty safely, you know, I'm not going to sit here and guarantee the safety of anything, but I can say they haven't found any bad side effects with it yet. So the key there is start doing it before you have a lot of hair loss.
Well, that's a pretty good track record.
Yeah. Well, there's an interesting website. I think it's called askapatient.com. And this is a website where patients themselves write in reporting on side effects of drugs and procedures. Mm-hmm. Can gain a lot of information that way. And it's true. People usually write in if they're complaining. But if you go to a site like I did with the minoxidil, there's only 8 entries for the past 5 years, and they're all saying, yeah, it itched a little bit. That's a pretty safe drug. So, and of course, you can look in, again, other places to find the product's overall safety, but this patient's feedback is really very informative.
Another thing is a guy that I don't understand. I see women plucking their eyebrows, and I look at eyebrows, and I say, it seems like there's only a couple hundred hairs there. After a while, there's not going to be anything left, and they're going to look freakish. Are women going to run out of hairs, and what do they do?
You know, it would be really nice if the hairs that we started plucking, where we don't want them, that we started at age 13 to pluck, it would be nice if they never came back, but they do.
Oh, okay.
They grow back. When you get older, sometimes your eyebrows get a little thinner or they start going gray, and you have these teeth, sometimes they start getting curly. Men and women, well, men get big, bushy eyebrows, but there are particular eyebrow issues for women, and I have a little eyebrow question and answer in the book. But no, they don't stop growing just because you pluck them, unfortunately.
I didn't know that. You said there are even eyebrow transplants?
Yeah, this was developed after we dropped the bomb on the Japanese. There was a Japanese man who developed eyebrow transplants for people who were hurt in those blasts. What he found out, this is so interesting, you can take a hair follicle from anywhere in the body. I think for eyebrow transplants, they take them, you know, right, the little fine hairs that are right near in front of your ear. Anyway, you can take a hair follicle, transplant it anywhere, and it will grow. You could put one on the end of your nose and it would grow. So if you want an eyebrow transplant, that's how they do it. And you just have to get someone very skilled so he can angle the follicle in the right direction. And they will grow. You have to trim them because it's not like an eyebrow hair that just stops at a certain point. So you have to trim them, but you can do that.
Women in particular use a lot of hair dyes and perms. Is there much of a risk of skin irritation or permanent skin problems or cancer from that?
They have been researching that supposed link between hair dye and cancer. It's been 30, maybe 20 or 30 years, and they really have not found anything substantial to connect to that. However, if you're concerned about it still, it's a very easy solution, which is just to use semi-permanent hair dye. Again, I don't want to be the person to say, oh, there's no risk. I can report that they haven't found significant links to cancer. In terms of things you can do to really hurt your scalp, though, and maybe cause permanent hair loss, is wearing really, really tight styles, like cornrows, anything that pulls the hair tightly, or any kind of chemical that might burn the scalp, because there is such a thing as just damaging the follicle to the point where it will not grow again.
And we have a whole generation of African Americans doing the very tight cornrows and braiding.
Right. Yeah, they should probably not do that, but tell that to a 15-year-old or whoever's doing it. They think they're immortal, so, and they'll have hair forever.
Now, Lynette, you had an item that I never imagined, and that is people dyeing their pubic hair. Most people aren't going to see your pubic hair. Why would people care enough and go to all the trouble to dye pubic hair?
I don't know how many people do it or don't do it. All I know is if you're a woman and you see those first gray hairs, it is really traumatic. So I assume that some people are trying it. When I researched it, it looks like a lot of young girls try it. Maybe they're trying to dye it green or purple. I don't know. But I did find out some information about it on the Columbia University's website called goaskalice.com. And what they advised, if you want to do it, is to be really, really careful. And they actually advised against doing it, which I would agree with because you can burn things down there. To use a product intended for beards just because it's thick and it's not drippy. So why people want to do anything, all you have to do is look at the number of facelifts, the number of procedures, incredibly painful procedures people are willing to do to their face. I don't know why. I do have stuff in the book about facelifts who they work for, what they're doing. There's even plastic surgery for hands mm-hmm. now. And I think it's easy to poo-poo it unless you happen to be a person who's really, really bothered by this one thing. There's a way to deal with that and make you feel a whole lot better. I'm not going to pass judgment on it, so...
I know when cancer patients lose all their hair, they have a representative come around who not only offers wigs, but also a merkin, M-E-R-K-I-N, which is an artificial pubic hair that they can wear.
I have no idea how that works. You are in territory that I know nothing about.
Well, I do know that you know a lot about sex. Is the generation that in their formative years had the mantra drugs, sex, and rock and roll, are they having a lot of sex now? Or are they not keeping up with the kids?
I did want to attempt to answer the age-old question, how much sex are people having? More to the point, how much sex are other people having? Because it's all about, am I normal? How do I compare? That is what's usually driving people to the shrink and to everywhere else. It's the big question in the world is, am I normal? The standard response to how much sex are other people having is always once a week. Who knows what people, if they're telling the truth, if they aren't. But one thing I found out that was sort of interesting is there is a small percentage of people in all age groups who just have a whole lot of sex. There's about 20% in the over 50 group, maybe they're widows or just in relationships where it's kind of gone stale, that haven't had sex in about a year. So everybody else sort of falls in between. It's going to be roughly, it all averages out for our age group, say 50 to 60, to about once a week. But thrown in there is these extremes of having sex three times a week and having sex not in a year. So the bottom line is it's really all over the place. Sex therapists that I talked to, I interviewed about four sex therapists for this book, and some of them are quoted in there. Their take on it is basically, it's good to keep having sex. As long as the two of you feel like it's enough, that's fine. But if you've gotten to the point where either one of you is really unsatisfied with the amount or it's just faded away, you should try to see a counselor about that, because it is an important part of our lives, and it's sort of a sad thing to let that fade away. People feel kind of sad about it. One of the therapists said to me, it can be very, very hard to get it back just on your own. I think he was at the time, he mentioned a couple who hadn't had sex in 6 years. This therapist's comment on that was, it's just going to be a lot harder for them, certainly much harder than the first time they had it, because it takes a lot of work to get comfortable with the idea again and, I guess, fired up about each other again.
So there is no normal, but because it's such an important thing in our culture, when couples don't have much sex, it has an effect on the relationship, but even if it's just feeling that, well, we should be doing it.
Right, exactly. Well, that's why these counselors have stressed, look, if you're doing once a month, once every 2 months, and you're both fine with that, there's not a problem. I mean, it shouldn't be a matter of what are other people thinking or what are other people doing. And certainly, sex drive as you get older, but particularly after 70, I think. I don't think what happens is you turn 50 and all of a sudden everything changes. It's not like that. It's more gradual, certainly more individual. But it has to do with what are you satisfied with in your relationship. I think probably if there are couples where they aren't having sex anymore and it's not bothering anyone, then those aren't the people that end up going to get help with it. But you're right, sex is very much emphasized in our society, but I think it's emphasized in every society.
Sure.
You know, people, it's a great part of life. Not so many people want to just let it go without a whimper.
We have this myth, too, that menopause is just the death knell for sex. What really happens in menopause in terms of sexual interest and sexual activity?
For not every woman, but a percentage of women, you lose some libido. You do. Not everyone. They don't have anything really to take for it. There's no female Viagra. During menopause, it really goes up and down a lot. Because your hormone levels are fluctuating so much, what you're feeling in the midst of all that probably isn't indicative of what you're going to feel when you're all through it. So you do, a lot of women get a lot of the sexual interest back. Some don't. And unfortunately, there is no pill to take. You just have to get used to a different kind of intimacy or a different level of interest, not like where you can just pop one of those pills.
So we're not seeing much effectiveness or popularity from off-label use of Viagra for women?
No. doesn't work that way. The thing is, people were looking into testosterone for women, but that is not okay. That use is not okay by the FDA. It hasn't been tried very often. It can make you grow hair and have different male reactions. There is a patch that has been prescribed, off-label prescription testosterone patch for women, and it has shown to increase their sexual interest, but proceed with caution, because those are hormones you're messing around with. You're turning on something that you can't necessarily turn off. Very experimental now. So you have to ask yourself, is it really worth it?
That's physical interest in sex. That's counterbalanced by some very liberating things, that there's no longer a fear of pregnancy. There's probably at a point in your career where you have more time. You're not rearing children anymore unless you're volunteering with the grandchildren.
Right.
So, you know, the psychological effects often more than offset some decreased libido.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's about intimacy, and it's about not comparing yourself to what you were doing and feeling at age 25. Although there was some interesting research about how men in their 50s actually feel just as good about sex as they did at 25. This is men who tend to get more, am I measuring up, am I as good as it was again? They're very into measuring things. But overall, they're pretty happy with their sex life.
Yeah, what happens is that men need more physical stimulation, and so they get more emotionally involved in sex as they get older. And instead of having what I call microwave sex, where you rip each other's clothes off and 3 minutes later it's pretty much all over, now it's slow cooking where you have to take your time and really savor the whole experience. And women often get turned on by men being so much more interested and involved in sex rather than just seeing it as relieving tension, shall we say.
Right. I think that's absolutely true, and that is another one of the silver linings, is that all of a sudden these two sort of perspectives or inclinations are meeting in the middle where, wow, this guy is finally interested in foreplay. He can slow down and really enjoy that. And, of course, that's what women have always liked a lot. So that is a nice thing that happens for couples. One of the things that's a challenge when you get older is if you've been in a long-term marriage and you've raised children together, sometimes it's just the familiarity, you know, 20 years, 30 years, that's the problem. They're just bored with each other. So if it's a mental problem like that, that's something you can deal with. Change that, I think, a lot easier than if a woman physiologically simply does not have any sexual desire anymore, which does happen sometimes. And then the man takes it personally, even if he knows it's a physiological thing. So to me, that physical situation would be harder than we're bored. You can always do something, work with a therapist, go on a vacation. You can always do something, I think, to get over the boredom. I hope.
Yeah, it's ironic that as we get older, our hormones between men and women become more and more similar, and we become more like each other.
Yeah, I mean, that can be a good thing. I mean, a lot of the issues that were there when we were young, well, most of them around childbearing and child raising, we don't have to worry about anymore. That's a big relief. You can kind of get back to who are you, who do you want to go out with, what do you want your relationship to be like, and it's definitely liberating.
We're talking with Lynette Padua, author of three books. The first one is Everything You Pretend to Know and Are Afraid Someone Will Ask. The second one is Say the Magic Words, How to Get What You Want from People Who Have What You Need. And her newest book, Quick, Answer Me Before I Forget the Question, which, by the way, is quite a bargain. It's only $13. You can find out more about Quick Answer Me at quickanswerme.com. And Lynette also does consulting, ghostwriting, and editing for books. Information about that is also at the quickanswerme.com. And Padua is spelled P-A-D-W-A. Lynette, anything else you want to add?
I would just say this book, Quick Answer Me Before I Forget the Question, we've been talking mostly about hair and physical aspects of aging, but the book does talk about other things as well. There's a chapter about the future that's really fun. The options we're going to have as we get older, things like co-housing, you know, living in college towns and all the different options that are open to us, new ideas about retirement, or at least the retirement years. There's a little informative section on paperwork, what do we really need to get done as we turn 50 and older. So it's not all about the body. All these other things happen. I think once you look into the different elements of aging and start to understand them more, you feel not only relief, but actual enthusiasm about this stage of life. At least I know I did after I researched the book. I felt much better than I did when I had all these questions that I had answers for.
Well, that's where you're so helpful, that we learn more about what we're getting into rather than just stumbling into it like poor Carrie did. And yes, I am plucking some of the juicier things that are more fun. And so I'm going to get back to some of the juicier, more fun things.
That's fine with me.
But first, did you ever wonder why some people look, act, and feel more youthful than other people their ages? Would you like to know their secret? Their secret is they think differently. Adopt their mindset, and you too can think, feel, look, and be more youthful. Check out antiagingspeaker.com. That's anti-aging-speaker.com to learn how I can help you and your organization or company learn the secrets and develop a youthful mindset. Aging is mostly a mental game, and you need to know the rules. anti-aging-speaker.com. And now back to Lynette Padua. Lynette, as a man, I can't imagine anything more embarrassing than being in the emergency room with one of those four-hour erections. I picture the staff snickering and saying, oh, you got to check this out. You won't believe this. Yeah. How often does that happen?
It's rare. It's rare. Now, it's the people who make Cialis and Viagra who are insisting on the websites how rare it is. So I didn't have the time to really do deep research about how often it happens. I don't think it's very often. And the thing is, it is dangerous if it happens. One thing you can do right away is take an antihistamine. It has something to do with the blood dilation and all that. Don't wait 4 hours.
Don't wait 3 hours and 59 minutes.
An hour after you've had sex. Yeah, go to the hospital then. Don't worry about being embarrassed because they have to give you a shot, unfortunately. Get it back down again. If it's like that too long, you can have permanent damage. However, this is rare. It's really pretty rare.
And by permanent damage, you mean permanent impotency.
I just don't feel well credentialed enough to go into the details of it, but it can have some effects like that. Like millions and millions of people take these drugs, and if it were a huge problem, I think we would really have heard about it. So I do believe that it's rare, but I also think that you don't want to wait till 4 hours. You just don't want to do that. Forget about being embarrassed. Just get in there. Fix it fast. Because the way those drugs work is after you have release, that erection is supposed to go down the normal amount of time that it would. And if that's not happening, just get to a doctor.
And one of the good pieces of advice you had is try to find a hospital that has a urologist on duty. They're going to be much more skilled at handling it because it's rare.
Yes, right. How you find that in the midst of your panic over your giant, unrelenting erection. I don't know. Hopefully your partner will ask those questions.
Or by rule of thumb is the bigger the hospital, the more likely they would have one.
Right. Hopefully you'd be able to make a few calls. But even as I'm saying this, I know how difficult it is to get any answer out of any hospital. So, yeah, you're probably right. Go to the hospital and start demanding a urologist.
My guess is the people that have this four-hour erection, most of them are probably people that said, well, if one blue pill was good, two is probably going to be even better.
Drugs are wildly popular, so I'm assuming they work and don't hurt you most of the time.
They're popular with men. Are women as happy with it as men are?
I've had several discussions with the different therapists about that. The male therapists seem to think women are incredibly happy with this. The one female therapist I talked about said, you know, it's an unspoken fact that there's a lot of women in this age group who are happier with less sex, and they aren't thrilled to constantly being presented with this giant penis. We can say that on your show. But so some women are less than enthusiastic about sort of being expected to perform. There's another kind of odd aspect to this whole Viagra thing, which is that the pill is expensive. So you've taken it, and then you're ready. And a lot of men just have the attitude, like, let's go. Not bother to see if the other person's in the mood. So there have been women that feel exasperated and used by this. How many? I have no idea. I think if people have been having trouble and this has solved the problem, they're probably really, really happy about it. In any relationship, hopefully both people are on the same page, but apparently they are not on the same page a lot of times, so that's when they...
So you have been feeling like the clock is ticking and they want to make sure they get their money's worth.
Right.
Now, you also have another problem that with Viagra is that it's led to a lot of infidelity because it opened the door to the possibility. So it's had its good and bad aspects.
I think very interesting interview I've got in the book with a marriage counselor. And I asked him, what's been the biggest change since we all were kids and what's driving partners apart? And it's not Viagra, it's the internet. It's chat rooms, sex rooms, that whole porno subculture of internet activity that has been really detrimental on marriages, as has the BlackBerry. This doesn't have anything to do with sex, just with the computer and email being a really handy excuse to emotionally check out of your family. Tremendously divisive element that's really strained marriages in a lot of different respects. But the idea, what he brought up when I was talking about, well, what do you mean about online chat rooms and all that? He said, well, it's so different than Playboy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Playboy doesn't talk back to you. You're not having a interaction with Playboy. So a guy can go downstairs and be doing this stuff every night, and no, he's not having an affair, but it sort of feels like it. So it's this uncharted territory that can be very hurtful to women, not to mention the fact that it sets up this ridiculous standard of how a woman is supposedly going to respond to you. Plus, taking it a step further is how very easy it is to hook up with strangers online and go have sex with them the next day at lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Access, so much easier to cheat on every level.
Wow. Since we're doing some fact checking today, men think size matters, and you say it's not length that matters, but width?
It's not me saying it personally, Michael.
Okay.
It's surveys that I looked at. Oh, man, when I started checking out this particular question, I could have stayed online for months and never gotten to the end of it. But basically, yes, it's width, not length, that matters. There definitely is such a thing as too big, and that starts hurting, and it's not all that great. And this is one of those other areas where men are so much more concerned with the measurement and the length and the who's bigger than women are. Women don't care that much. There's a much lower standard. We take a much lower standard to be satisfied than men think we do.
Men are happy to hear that. And you also say shoe size and member size, it's a myth?
Yeah. This is so funny. I think lifestyle condoms, oh no, it wasn't lifestyle condoms. I was measuring the average size. But there were these two researchers that actually performed very specific measurements on these member size and shoe size, and yes, that is a myth. So don't ever judge anyone that way. You're looking at their small, dainty feet.
On dating, we have an awful lot of boomers and seniors dating. Did our drug, sex, and rock and roll generation, are they going to bed on the first date?
There was a very extensive AARP survey on this very question. Put it this way, men would definitely sleep with any woman who would have them on the first date. Basically, nothing's changed in that regard. Women claim that it'd be surprised the third date or later. So this is what people are saying. What I didn't find any research on is what are they actually doing? Because I just have my doubts about the difference between what people say must happen and what they actually do. In general, if you're dating, the good rule of thumb is certainly I would wait till date 4 to start really expecting anything or pushing or talking about that. You have to give the other person some room for sure. Like in so many other areas of the relationship question, it hasn't changed that much since we were younger. We still get nervous. So the sex thing is sort of the same.
Did want to be sure to ask that question. Why are some older women wearing too much perfume?
The reason is that we stop having as much of a sense of scent as we get older. And in addition to that, there's this thing which everyone has experienced called odor fatigue. Like, you know, you smell something really bad, and then you're around it for a few minutes, you don't smell it anymore. That's because scent is actually carried on a molecule. It'll overwhelm the receptors in your nose, breaths, and once they're all filled up, they just stop being able to smell that until those molecules have dissipated in your system. So that's called odor fatigue. In older people, it takes much, much longer to recover from that. So they will just spray all this stuff on and not be
not smell it.
Not smell it that well in the first place. Not be able to recover from the odor fatigue, so they really don't smell it. You should not be able to smell someone's perfume unless you're standing about 2 feet away from them. Any more than that is really too much.
So younger people will smell the perfume and say, oh my God, that's oppressive. The older men, it might be just right because they're experiencing the same decrease in the smell that the women were.
I don't know. Maybe you can enlighten me. I don't know how much men like scents. I think there's an issue with clashing scents. The thing men really hate is, of course, the smell of nail polish remover. That all scents, or even nail polish, putting it on. But another problem, I think, is women put on lotion that smells one way. Hand lotion, face lotion, perfume, hairspray. It's just so much different stuff that it gets nauseating. So you have to watch out for that. The older you get, the more products you use. So you have to get unscented products where possible and then just choose a perfume and wear that one.
And fortunately, the marketplace is providing more unscented products.
Yeah.
I want to take you to the bathroom. You said there's a support group for people who wet themselves when they sneeze. What in the world goes on in a support group like that? I would think it would be pretty depressing. And how much is there to talk about?
I know. I don't know. God, I know it's really a problem. I mean, this was one of those things where I should not laugh at this, but I just was imagining the support group. I laughed and peed again. You know, I mean, how week after week, how many times can you say the same thing? It is a problem. It's a problem for women. I don't know of anyone who's actually in one of these support groups, but they do exist. What can you say about any support group? I mean, sometimes they're really helpful if you are so inclined to tell your tale again and again. And sometimes you just have to scratch your head and wonder, wouldn't it be better to go see a movie? I don't know.
There are exercises that help build the muscles to give more control for at least some people.
Right. The thing that happens is a lot of times during childbirth, you damage some of those muscles, but you don't feel it then. There's no reason, problem with it after the child is born. Then years later, this becomes a problem for us in 50 and up. Just sort of an odd but not uncommon at all situation. There are different things you can do. If you are having a really bad time, there's surgery you can undergo. It's really not a laughing matter. I do feel bad about laughing about it because if you've got a bad case of this, how irritating and frustrating, and so you want to do something about it.
With age, people tend to get shorter. My father used to say he was being downsized. Do some people shrink more than others?
Women have this problem with osteoporosis more than men. They have that problem a little bit more. But for everybody, as you get older, all the things that are the cushiony parts of your body that cushion the bones and keep them away from each other, they get less cushiony, they get more dried out, they get more compacted, and that's why we tend to shrink a little bit. The best thing to do for it, of course, we all know, is weight-bearing exercises. The best thing to do in general is exercise. That is the key. That's the one thing I learned from writing this book. You've got to exercise.
Yeah, exercise is the biggest health tonic of all, and the price is right to boot.
Absolutely. The key is finding something you like to do, maybe someone you like to do it with, and just making it a part of your life. That exercise can really help stave off Alzheimer's, or lower risk of getting it if they're getting enough exercise. Might have something to do with getting the oxygen to your brain. They don't exactly know why. But in everything, mood, the way you, everything. So I just urge people, find something you like. Take a walk. Anything.
Yeah, there are a lot of articles out now that say, oh, work crossword puzzles and it'll keep you from getting Alzheimer's. You're going to get far more benefits out of exercise than you are out of doing crossword puzzles. Well, we're not going to have time to do prenups and talking to your parents about money and where to live and best foreign countries to live and RVs and co-housing and all that stuff. For that, they need to go to Quick Answer Me before I forget the question. But I do have one more question that I want to be sure to get in. Why is it that when we get older, our shoes don't fit?
What happens is the padding on the bottom of your feet just isn't keeping the foot up as much anymore. It gets all smushed out. So everyone usually gains at least a half a foot size. And the other thing that I found that I thought was pretty funny was there is no standard for sizing shoes. It just doesn't exist. Every company is sort of different. And that's why you could be a 7 in one brand and an 8.5 in the other brand, and you just need to try them on. But most of our feet do spread out a little bit, like the rest of us, and that's why our feet are getting bigger.
And I just read an article that New Balance is really taking a huge market share from Nike with the over 50 generation because they have a lot more wide sizes, and Nike is focused more on the athletes, and New Balance did that with hardly any advertising on it.
That's interesting that you should say that, because years ago, because I just have kind of wide feet anyway, New Balance was the only shoe I could get. I don't know why all brands aren't offering more wide sizes, but it would be a really wise thing to do, because we're all moving there, especially since so many people, I could say for women, don't wear the kind of restricting little shoes as much as we used to maybe 30 years ago. So then our feet are going to get even bigger because we've been wearing sneakers and comfortable shoes a lot as opposed to tight little high heels.
Yeah, the marketplace on shoes is missing it big time. You go into the orthotic shoe stores and the specialty shoe stores for people who have problems or diabetes or something, and those shoes, most of them are just awfully ugly. They're atrocious.
I think
a company could clean up if they just offer reasonably attractive shoes that are more comfortable in wide sizes.
Well, I think what's mystified all of us in this boomer age group is why on earth the money hasn't followed us with things like design, style, clothing. Why these decisions still seem to be made almost exclusively by people who can actually read the 7-point type on the shampoo bottle. We've got the buying power that we thought would drive the market has not driven it the way we thought that it would. I don't see why. I just don't understand why. If someone can come up with the answer to that question, it'd be great.
You'll help them write the book.
Right. That's my next big major research project.
We've been talking with Lynette Padua, author of Quick Answer Me Before I Forget the Question, which is very reasonably priced at just $13, and just a delightful book with lots of answers and humor. And she also does consulting and ghostwriting and editing if you're writing a book yourself. And you can get the information at quickanswerme.com. Lynette, it's been just a delight talking with you, and thank you so much for sharing your research.
Thank you for having me. It was fun.
Time for commentary. What can we say about the zany conversation with Lynette Padua? Hopefully we've dispensed some practical advice, dispelled some myths, and sated some curiosity. And maybe you even have a new go-to person for nitty-gritty practical advice. A few comments. I would underscore what Lynette said about exercise and Alzheimer's disease. The research on Alzheimer's is very tricky. Many factors have been shown to have an influence on the risk for Alzheimer's disease, including genetics, early education, particularly in language skills, nutrition, avoiding strokes, avoiding depression, having a positive spirit, education, and of course exercise. Exercise probably plays such a key role because it helps with health, it helps avoid strokes, it helps avoid depression, helps keep people at a healthy weight, and gives people more energy and vitality. When we talked about Viagra for women, Lynette pointed out that it hasn't had impressive results so far, and she mentioned a testosterone patch for women, Intrinsa, Intrinsa. She was very skittish about this because it's messing with women's hormones. Another perspective is that with menopause, you have a decline in hormones, including testosterone. So Intrinsa can be replacing the testosterone that is being lost with menopause. I'm very skittish about hormone replacement for women because of what happened with Premarin, and how the Women's Health Initiative found that that did more harm than good. Now we have a movement for bioidentical hormone replacement for women. It is worth taking a look at, but I would be very cautious about it. The jury is out, and I would only do it with the guidance of a physician that you have a lot of trust in and that has a specialty knowledge in this area. So it appears to be possible to revive lagging libido in women with bioidentical hormone replacement or with testosterone supplements, but it's not clear whether it's advisable. And of course, that has to be made on a very individual basis. Lynette and I kidded about support groups, but I'm serious about it. Support groups should be a means to an end and should only be needed for a limited amount of time. For most problems, I would say a year should be plenty of time to learn whatever you needed to learn, to do the healing that you needed to do, and to move on with your life. If after a year that hasn't happened, I would take a close look at some alternatives to help you achieve the healing or achieve your goals. Now, I would make a couple exceptions to this. One is with alcohol and drug problems, you often need more than a year to get a solid sobriety. Another exception is with problems that cause post-traumatic stress disorder or reorienting prisoners who have been in prison for many years. One other exception would be for people who go on to leadership roles for the support movement and its cause. And just for fun, I thought I'd share with you a little about Merkins, since we stumbled out in the conversation. It has an interesting history. In the 17th century, prostitutes would shave themselves to get rid of lice or put on a merkin to cover sores from syphilis and other diseases. In bawdy British plays, where women were not allowed to be actresses and men had to play women's roles, sometimes merkins were used for the bawdier scenes. Likewise, today, Hollywood actors often use merkins to prevent themselves being photographed fully nude and possibly salvage an R rating. We have the name Merkin show up in a number of comedies. For example, in Dr. Strangelove, the President of the United States was Dr. Merkin Muffley. And today, Merkins have become sex toys with all kinds of beads and sequins and bright colors. Baby steps. I always try to leave you with a baby step, some little tweak you can make in your thinking or your behavior that'll help you live longer and healthier and happier. Today's baby step, if you don't already have it, is to install a belief that if there's anything you need to know, if there's any decision that you need to make, the data are out there waiting to be found, and the data are more plentiful and more accessible than ever in history. There's wonderful books like Lynette's Quick Answer Me. There's the internet. There's a cornucopia of places to find the information you need. Your mom probably told you, measure twice, cut once. I hope she did. Do your homework, because if you spend a little extra time tracking down the information, it can save an enormous amount of grief and often an enormous amount of money as well. So you want that belief that anything you need to know, the data are waiting for you to find it. There is a caveat with this, however. While the data are far more plentiful, we have to be more sophisticated about evaluating the data, because there's an awful lot of self-serving data out there, including research data. We're getting an awful lot of piecemeal data that doesn't look at the big picture. And we have to consider the source and whether it's self-serving and whether they're trying to sell us something. So it's wonderful that we live in this data-rich world, but it is a buyer-beware or researcher-beware world as well. Emails. Love to get those emails. Emails this week were about the show last week with Brent Marchant on movies. Most comments talked about a favorite movie that wasn't mentioned. Examples included Defending Your Life, Lost Horizon, and Wizard of Oz. Another comment that I got a couple times was, hey, I go to movies to laugh and have a good time. That's one of the most important functions of the movie, and you guys made this so much work and so serious. Lighten up. Point well taken. If you have some questions about aging that Lynette didn't answer, send an email to radio@agelesslifestyles.com. If you have comments about today's show, send an email to radio@agelesslifestyles.com. I'd love to hear from you. This is Dr. Michael Bricky with Ageless Lifestyles Radio on webtalkradio.net. The most recent shows are on webtalkradio.net, and all shows are archived on agelesslifestyles.com. This is Dr. Michael Bricky thanking you for joining us in our quest to live longer, healthier, and happier.